Welcome to the Wednesday, September 7, 2022 hybrid meeting of Thurston County Planning Commission. The Thurston County Planning Commission is a citizens advisory committee to the Board of County Commissioners on land use planning matters, such as the comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance amendments. Planning Commission actions are in the form of recommendations to the County Commissioners, who are the final decision makers. All Planning Commission meetings are open to the public. Citizens are welcome to observe all Planning Commission briefings and work sessions. Public comment is allowed on those topics for which a public hearing has not been heard. My name is Eric Cassino. I'm the season's chair of the Planning Commission, and I reside in District 2. With that, we'll start out with introductions. And is Commissioner Pessinger online? We'll start with you, Commissioner.
Kevin Pessinger, District 1.
Joel Hansen, District 3.
Jim Simmons, District 3.
Helen Wheatley, District 1.
Scott Nelson, District 3.
Doug Garman, District 2.
Barry Halverson, District 2.
Thank you very much. And with that, has everybody had a chance to look over the agenda for this evening? And if so, I entertain a motion.
Move to accept the agenda.
I'll second.
The agenda has been moved and seconded. Call for the vote.
Commissioner Pessinger?
Aye.
Mr. Hansen?
Aye.
Mr.
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Nelson?
Aye.
Mr. Harmon?
Aye.
Mr. Robinson?
Aye.
Mr. Casino?
Aye. The agenda has been approved. Does everybody have a chance to look over the meeting minutes? Is there anybody discussion on the meeting minutes? Anything needs to be changed or worked over? Great. With that, I'd entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the meeting minutes and accept the audio as the official meeting record.
Second. The meeting minutes, or the motion is to accept the meeting minutes for August 17th, 2022, and accept the audio as the official meeting record. Call for the vote.
Mr. Pessinger?
Aye.
Mr. Hansen?
Abstain.
Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Commissioner Wheatley?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Carmen?
Aye.
Commissioner Halverson?
Aye.
Commissioner Casino?
Aye. The minutes have been accepted. With that, we'll move on to the public communication portion of our meeting. Those participating via Zoom, please choose the raise your hand option if you wish to address the Planning Commission. You'll be promoted to a panelist when it is your turn to speak and be seen. To be seen, please turn on your camera. If you are dialing in, press star 9 to raise your hand. Make sure you also choose the star 6 to unmute yourself. A 3-minute timer will show on one of the video screens to help you keep track. And with that, we'll start out with Mrs. Seppinen. Oh, did we lose her? Oh, there she is. Loretta, go ahead.
Hello, thank you. I'm speaking here tonight about your second item on the agenda, the Grand Mound Subarea Plan. I want to suggest that you might have the tail wagging this dog, the tail being the landowner requests to rezone, which you have a number of that you do need to deal with. But the dog is really the community vision for what happens, and that's very important to get clarified and is not very clear in this document. And importantly, because this is a UGA, the Economic Development Plan. And that's what I want to talk about is two items related to economic development. And the first of which is the Chehalis tribe. The tribe is a key economic player in Southwest Thurston County. It is probably the biggest by a long shot in the immediate area with 1,500 employees. The income from the tribe's enterprises is not lining the pockets of some faraway developer. All that money gets reinvested by either tribal services provided or in its own enterprises. And in so doing, it becomes part of an economic engine for the area. I urge you before you move very far on this plan, that is before the next time you meet, that you need on the plan, you need to have engage in a government to government level arrangement with the Chehalis tribe. My second recommendation is about the agricultural neighbors. Now, right in the UGA, there are little or maybe no farms at all, but it's an area because the UGA has commercial, industrial, and industrial zones, it's able to provide services that you can't have in the rural area. And it turns out the rural area here is very much an agricultural area. You take a 15-mile radius around the growth, the UGA of Grand Mound, and it is mostly agricultural land. In fact, about 20% of all of the farmland in the county is right in that 15-mile radius, and it's some of the best land in the county. You might recall some editorials that Stephen Bramwell, the Thurston County WSU Extension Director, wrote about 2 or 3 years ago in the Olympia. And he talked about the need to rebuild agricultural infrastructure, stuff like cold and dry storage and value-added processing. The logical place for that rebuilding for the agriculture that's in that part of the county is in Grand Mound. So I urge you before you move very far ahead here is to work with Stephen Bramwell to get the details of what kind of industrial land needs there are for the Grand Mound area to serve its immediate agricultural neighbors. And I hope there'll be more opportunities for the community to weigh in on their vision for the local community as well. Contemporary, up-to-date information about the vision and up-to-date connection with the tribe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else online that would like to address the Planning Commission? Not seeing anybody, we'll move to the boardroom and we have Ryan Duskin. Yeah, we'd be happy to hear from you.
Thank you for taking your time to hear us. I am Ryan Duskins. I live at 19331 Old Highway 99 Southwest, right off I-5 on and right outside of Grand Mound. And we are here to see if you guys would be so kind to put us in the UGA. And we have some of that farm ground that she was talking about, but we're 1,000 feet off of the I-5 exit, 1,000 feet from the exit. And this started, I came in contact with the property in 2015. I represented the owner then, and he'd been working at it for some time to do stuff with it, including agriculture. It was a dairy farm at one time, no longer a dairy farm. And it became apparent that the zoning wasn't going to work for what it was designed for. It's a very high traffic, noisy area. All the trucks are braking, jaking to the stop signs in front of our farm and stuff. You can't even talk on your farm outside. Like when you go out by the fence, you can't talk on your phone. You got to just wait. Call them back when you get away from the road, right? We're right next to I-5 and 99 and Highway 12. So in 2016, we started talking to people, county commissioners and such about what to do. And this is 2016. So we made an official variance permit request in 2017. The county called us back and said, listen, we're already doing this Grand Mound subplot area thing. We're going to have it wrapped up by 2018, 19 at the latest. And why don't you guys just mothball that and come in with us because we're going to help you out. And so we did. And we mothballed it. The county sent back the check. And they sent us the guidelines and said, here's the timelines, here's where we'll have it. And it says right here, it'll be final. You know, these are some of the original documents. That three-ring binder is the history of me working on this project since 2016. And so we submitted to be included in the consideration of being put in the UGA. And partially because of all of our neighbors are commercial, except for, you know, my house, but everything else is commercial around me. There's the truck wash, modern machinery, trucking company, marijuana farm across the street, arterial commercial across. So in 2000, one of the things, I don't know if I need to muddy the waters, but one parcel got left out of our, we have five tax parcels. We only requested three to be put in, and one parcel got left out. And so we've been trying to rectify that, but it's the parcels that are all alongside the road right near the interstate. And I can provide a map if anyone would like to see the map. Very simple map. But with that said, really what's going on is we try to go through this process. And I think even back then they said, hey, Grand Mound's important. But then they split off Rochester, and they did Rochester, and they did the main street in Rochester and everything. We just got put on the back burner. So basically, especially since 2017, we've just been waiting. The past owner said, hey, listen, I'm going to die. I'm 76 years old. I want to spend some time with my kids. I've been doing this since 2006. You buy it and take the mantle and carry on. So we did purchase the property from him last year in 2021. He moved to Texas with his kids, and we carry on the fight. You know, I don't know if it's a fight. We're working together. We're trying to see a vision that works for everybody. And so that's where we're at. I'm confident. I feel good with county commissioners that I've met with all some of the other members. I think we're on the right track. One last thing I would say, and kind of in regards to some of the other statements, is I also have a business in Grand Mound. North Fork Realty, we're in a strip mall right in Grand Mound across from Starbucks and Key Bank and all the fast food places, right? And the only people building in Grand Mound is the Chalice Tribe. We have a very, very good working relationship with Chalice Tribe. We represent some of their members, high managers and stuff, in real estate transactions and stuff. We have a good, good working relationship with the Chalice Tribe. But the Chalice Tribe is the only thing going on in Grand Mound. And it's really apparent. We're finally breaking ground on something new, which is amazing. It's not the Chalice Tribe, which is good. And the one little fact that no one talks about is the tribe doesn't pay taxes. So now we have a community driven by the tribe. Major employer, major enterprise, major everything, but we don't have the support that you would normally have with all those enterprises. You know, that's the reason we don't have the other services that that other communities have. That's the reason we're in some of the situations we are. And I'm just saying that we need to work with the Chalice Tribe, but we also need to have some other growth and development. They have bought all the land in front of my office next to I-5. They bought all the land where used to be the trailer sales place and all that stuff. I don't know, we're out of time, but, and so it's a major concern. If you talk to any business owner and community member down there, they know it, right? For our schools, for our communities, for our fire departments, for our police departments, it's important. So this decision is not just about my land, it's about the community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the boardroom that would like to address us this evening? All right. Well, with that, we'll move on to our next item, which would be the emergency housing ordinance. Leah Davis.
Good evening, commissioners. Leah Davis with Community Planning. And thank you for attending the final session of the emergency housing ordinance. You all remember we had two work sessions, one on July 6th and one on July 20th. We also held a public hearing August 17th. There were no comments received from the public. So the next steps for tonight are that we will review the amendments proposed at the post-hearing discussion, and then staff requests a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners tonight. Next slide, please. You may recall that there were 5 points that the commissioners asked staff to work on in that discussion. And you may have noticed on your copy that staff changed the draft ordinance for the first 2 points. That is, a public information meeting will be required instead of being waivable, and a cap on the maximum number of residents in any encampment to a 100% increase. There were 3 other points of discussion raised. That would be alcohol and drugs, weapons, and liability insurance.
I'm sorry, Kate. Can you go back to the cap on the residents? It just sounded confusing to me.
Okay. There, what we added was a cap on the maximum number of residents to an increase of 100%. And that's waivable under an emergency. So if a piece of land could accommodate 20 homeless campers, we could, under certain conditions and approved by the director, waive that to increase it up to 40. So we put a cap on the number of residents. and there was no cap under the wave pool requirement. Okay. So there were three other areas of discussion that we did some work on: alcohol and drugs, weapons, and liability insurance. And so tonight I would like to discuss and come to a decision on each of those three points before we move on to the next point. That will make it more efficient and maybe easier to follow. Next slide, please. So currently, alcohol and illegal drugs are prohibited. The prosecuting attorney's office recommends against making that change and making that discretionary. But if the commission still wants to change shall to may, staff has provided that language here. And we could have a discussion now.
Does anybody want to go ahead?
I'd like to know what the attorney actually said. What's his opinion based on?
The only thing that he added was that if you want to keep drugs and alcohol as an option for people, illegal drugs and alcohol, that he recommends that they should be prohibited in public and community areas like they would be anywhere in public or community areas, in an RV, in a tent. That was the only added comment he made. He thinks they should be prohibited. But there was some discussion that maybe that should be up to the sponsoring agency.
But if it's in the emergency resolution, say it's prohibited, then the assumption is it's prohibited in the tent and in the RV too.
Yes, but harder to regulate, probably.
Oh yeah, very hard.
Yeah, but if you're going to allow it, maybe make the restriction that it not be allowed in public or community areas. Yeah, like in.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, what you just said sounds preferable to me. So that's all.
Okay.
If anybody wants to elaborate on it.
Public areas only to limit.
Public, private areas that may be allowed. Yeah, thank you. That sounds like a good solution to me.
So allow illegal drug use and alcohol use in private areas, but prohibit them in community and public areas. That's what you say makes sense to you.
That's the recommendation from the PAO.
If you're going to allow it,
uh-huh,
at least put that restriction on it.
Right. Commissioner Simmons, you had more?
I guess I kind of go, it's not allowed in my neighborhood. Why should it be allowed here?
I think the idea here is that we have to keep these low barriers so people actually and I understand. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I understand the point that low barriers, how these things actually get utilized. Commissioner Hansen, you had something.
My question is: is there a distinction between allowing and the absence of a prohibition?
Well, the prohibition could still come from the operator.
Right.
Yeah.
But in terms of the language, I think there's a people would, I think, quite rightly have a hang up about the idea of, well, we allow illegal drugs, but if we just don't prohibit them in private areas, I think I'm wondering if there's a distinction there, if that is functionally the same thing or if it's different in some way.
Can I chime in? Sorry, hard to chime in virtually. there's two pieces going on here. One is an enforcement piece. So we are required to enforce our code and enforcing certain strictures on prohibiting in private areas can be difficult. However, I think part of this concern with making this discretionary, if we change the language from shall to may, it is up to the operator on whether or not they would like to prohibit these items. And what we could see in, if we had several of these encampments pop up across the county that are permitted, some operators may choose to prohibit, whereas others may not. And that could create a discrepancy in where folks are going to enter into an encampment. So I just wanted to add that in there.
Go ahead.
We really haven't defined illegal drugs. Scott pointed out that last time, when illegal federally or illegally in
in the state, but I'm not sure that we ought to allow illegal drugs.
I think the whole idea of illegal would be limited to what the county would actually enforce as illegal. If the, since this is a county code, it'd be what the county says illegal, so what the sheriff would call it illegal.
Okay, so I guess what I'm saying is that I'm not in favor of allowing illegal drugs. I'm in favor of allowing legal drugs and alcohol, both of which are, do a lot of the same things, but not.
Okay, Commissioner Olson, do you have something?
Well, I went back and looked at the comments to the county commissioners on the interim ordinances, and in all the hearings that they've had, all the comments they've received, nobody mentioned allowing drugs.
Nobody's asked for it as
well. Nobody, yeah, no comment that I saw that said this not letting people use drugs in these facilities is a barrier.
Okay.
You know, it was all kind of basic stuff. And I think I agree. I don't really care if people drink. I mean, I think it's probably a liability for whoever's hosting this, but you know, I think until we have evidence that allowing heroin and meth is keeping people out, I mean, I don't know why we should allow it.
Commissioner Wheatley?
Oh, yeah, well, I was just gonna remind us that it was Commissioner Day who brought this up, and he drew a really
hard line
on it. Yeah, exactly. He said he couldn't support it without this because of what you said, that it creates too high a barrier potentially. That's in the hands of whoever is making this agreement to decide. I think that's what this language is trying to get at. It sounds like the complicating factor, if we were to go this way and not keep the original language, is the suggestion that there be some added language about that it cannot be in
open use. Open use.
In open, yeah, however you want to put it, which would require an extra sentence, I guess, is how you'd fix that. But it seems, I guess my position on this is that this is one of those discretionary things. It's about an emergency ordinance. It's likely that if the landowner feels like there's a problem, that there's going to be a problem, they will go ahead and prohibit alcohol and or illegal drugs. But that that's their discretion.
I think that to further on the point that Commissioner James Train had made before was that the person that would be using these illegal drugs, they're already homeless. And they would be homeless in an unsanctioned camp somewhere. So by keeping this a low barrier, you would then have them into a sanctioned camp where you'd actually have a higher chance of keeping an eye on what's going on. And the camp would then be utilized. So I understand Commissioner Day's point very well, even though I'm not really hip on the idea of a whole bunch of people doing heroin on the side of the road. But I think if they're going to be doing heroin on the side of the road anyways, do we want to do it in a spot that we can see and help, or do we want them doing it in a spot where there's nobody that has any oversight on anything? It's kind of the idea. Does anybody else have? Commissioner Pestinger, did you have something?
No, I think we're splitting hairs here, but marijuana usage in my mind is far less dangerous than alcohol usage, and I'll stick with that.
I honestly don't think that marijuana would count as an illegal drug in the way that this is being written. Go ahead, Commissioner.
I guess I don't see how we can allow the use of illegal drugs. I mean, by stating it in this document, it's illegal. I mean, I'd say it's illegal for us to allow it. I mean, we're complicit in. So, I object to the use of the word illegal.
It's to differentiate between prescription drugs and illicit drugs. Because originally there was a ban on all drugs, and then we realized, well, that can't be. Yeah, so we defined it.
Yeah. I guess I would leave it out because it's assumed you can't use illegal drugs.
Boy, I get where you're going. I don't see how that would work.
But I'm surprised the attorney said it's okay to use
it. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Yeah. Isn't the problem here that we're changing the language? I mean, we have the language, and this is kind of an emergency, change. And that's why you have to address this issue. I mean, we can't just sort of leave it out because, you know, what you're saying is we need to change it for this emergency purposes. So that's why it has to be in there somehow. And you're saying, well, the easiest way to make the distinction is to just call it illegal drugs. To distinguish it from, well, alcohol is already there. You don't want to add a long list of other potential mood-altering substances or whatever that are not illegal. So, I mean, this seems like the most elegant solution to me. I understand, I think, that it has to be there because it's changing the language, that usually is there.
Commissioner Carmen, I heard you say something at the end, and I wanted to clarify. The county attorney says, do not lift the prohibition. Keep it as it is. Because I thought he said that. He said, prohibit them.
He wants to prohibit, yeah. but if we want to allow
but his first recommendation is, don't change it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he didn't take out the word illegal. That's why.
I see what you're saying.
Okay, having just heard that, I'm on board with not, I just don't want the idea of that the county is saying it's okay to have illegal drugs in these camps.
Sure.
So if it's prohibited, if illegal drugs are prohibited and it's in this writing, I'm fine with that. Because, alcohol and marijuana, God, I smell that stuff everywhere. So
you want to go with the attorney's first recommendation?
Prohibiting illegal drugs.
Prohibiting.
I think so. I don't want to get the impression that we're saying it's okay to be in these camps and do this.
Right. But, do we take a vote on these individually? Is that how you want to do that? Would that make your life easier if we went through this one?
It would be clearer for the record, yeah.
Okay, with that, I would entertain a motion on this particular issue.
Okay.
I would move that we break it into two points. One would be prohibiting illegal drugs, and the other would be may prohibit alcohol, other illegal drugs. We should not prohibit fighting.
Well, that would be at the discretion of the operator anyways, whether or not he allowed it.
Well, right now, you shall. It's prohibited here under the current words. We're talking about changing.
So your motion is the PAO's second version, or second best recommendation.
I'd say we, and shall prohibit illegal drugs. And then you write a name for prohibit
alcohol.
And may prohibit alcohol.
That is his second. That was his second choice.
He didn't go into that much detail. He said shall or may or both.
Well, in this quoted line here, it says may prohibit alcohol and
illegal.
Oh, okay. So you want to put the
prohibit alcohol,
and
shall illegal
drugs.
Well,
it'd be the other way around, though. You'd say may prohibit alcohol to be behind drugs.
Right.
Is what you'd do. So you'd be shall prohibit alcohol and illegal drugs, and then move the may and may prohibit fighting.
Alcohol.
All right. Well, okay, wherever it is. But the shall has to come first.
With the illegal drugs.
Not that I support.
Is there there a second to Commissioner Carmen's motion?
Second.
Okay. The motion is to change the wording to shall prohibit illegal drugs and fighting, but may prohibit alcohol.
We could add legal drugs if we wanted.
I don't want to add that.
Okay.
I'm just confused there. Does everybody understand the motion? Do you understand the motion?
I understand the motion.
Shall prohibit illegal drugs and fighting and may prohibit alcohol.
Although the fighting was not, I don't think he checked in.
I don't know if there's any way.
I think that was under the may, under the proposed.
No, fighting has never been allowed.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. There's the ant shell. Okay. Yeah. I got it.
With that, let's call for the vote on that motion.
Okay. Commissioner Fexinger?
Nay.
Commissioner?
Nay.
Commissioner Simmons?
Aye.
Commissioner Wheaton?
Nay.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Carmen?
Aye.
Commissioner Halverson?
Aye.
Commissioner Casino?
Aye. That motion passes 5-3. Shall prohibit illegal drugs and fighting and may prohibit alcohol.
Yes.
Okay, so now on to our next one.
Okay, the next one. This has to do with weapons. The county prosecuting attorney's office recommends against a requirement for safe storage of weapons. Requiring guests to use safe storage could be seen as a violation of the Second Amendment. In addition, this requirement could be cost prohibitive or something that residents may not use if it is optional. Next slide, please. If the commission would like to move forward with the requirement for safe storage of weapons, staff has provided the language here. So let's discuss that.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, go ahead, Commissioner Wheatley.
I actually had a question. We kind of breezed past, and I thought we talked about this whole question about prohibition of weapons. It says the county PAO recommends against prohibition on weapons. Not that, that's just a recommendation. So that seems like that's on the table. And that was something that was in the previous, the thing that we just voted on it was proposed to have language saying may prohibit weapons. I would like to bring that back in. It kind of got breezed past here as if just because the PAO recommended it, then it's not going to happen. But I would like to see the ability to have the discretion to prohibit weapons brought back in.
I would say that's not really up for discussion because it's been determined that it's a violation of the Second Amendment.
The BOCC has already determined that.
Yeah.
According to the second vote.
So there is no prohibition on weapons. We're talking about whether we're going to require a place to safely and securely store weapons. That's the only thing on the table tonight.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Well, as I understand it, we can't prohibit them from having weapons because of the Constitution, but the sponsor should be able to. They can limit.
Yeah, that wasn't our question to the prosecuting attorney.
So I mean, I was telling that we should say may, so it's pointed out we're talking about.
Well, I mean, the BOCC says we can't do it, but there's nothing in this code that would say that we have to enable the operator to be able to do it. That rule's not put on. This won't put a rule on the operator on whether or not they can put that in their rules.
Yeah, I think it does. Shall prohibit alcohol, illegal drug. I guess we've changed that.
Yeah, we would change all that. But I mean, if we don't.
I guess there's no mention of weapons other than safe storage.
Yeah.
So it would be.
So the county would not have a position on whether or not they have weapons.
Yeah.
It would be up to the operator. The what's on the table tonight is whether or not we're going to require operators to have safe storage facilities.
Yeah. I mean, I would recommend that safe storage is recommended to be provided for weapons on the property.
You like leaving it as recommended?
Is recommended. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
and I don't think it should be required because yeah. I mean, first of all, I don't know where you're going to get safe storage.
Yeah,
I think we had that discussion last time.
Yes, yeah.
And secondly, if I am in a position where I feel that I need that, I don't want it in the office 100 yards away.
Yeah,
I need it here. It, you know, not like somebody's going to break into my tent or little shack that I have, and I can say, "Well, wait a minute, let me go get my weapon." So, I mean, that's by that time it's too late.
Commissioner Hansen, did you have something?
I'm in agreement.
All right, Commissioner Pessinger, did you have anything on this issue?
I'm in agreement, but I see it as the opportunity for the place that's providing this or to provide storage. I mean, what happens when the person leaves and can't carry the weapon with them?
Oh, gosh.
They don't want to leave it laying around. The option to have safe storage is a good option.
There's no prohibition on the option. We're debating whether we're going to require safe storage.
Or make it recommended.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like recommended if I wasn't clear.
We see a whole lot of recommended. Okay, well, I entertain a motion on leaving safe storage at a recommendation level for the operator.
I make a motion that we include language, safe storage is recommended to be provided for weapons on the property.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded.
All right, Commissioner Pessinger.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Simmons?
Aye.
Commissioner
Wheatley? Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Carmen?
Aye.
Commissioner Elverson?
Aye.
Commissioner Casino?
Aye. That motion passes unanimously.
All right. The final point that we're talking about tonight. Currently, the requirement for general liability insurance is waivable in an emergency. The county prosecuting attorney's office recommends that the director consult with county risk management about waiving or modifying this requirement on a case-by-case basis. Staff has provided the language here, so let's discuss that.
I like the recommendation that they consult with risk management prior to making the decision.
Yeah,
that seems really reasonable.
I agree. Does
anybody have other comments on this?
So I would make a motion that we take the language and the waiver or modification of Thurston County Code 20.35.090, subparagraph 12, also requires concurrence from Thurston County Risk Management in addition to the other requirements necessary for a waiver under this section.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the PAO's recommendation. Call for the vote.
Commissioner Pessinger.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Simmons?
Aye.
Commissioner Wheatley?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner
Carmen?
Aye.
Commissioner Elverson?
Aye.
Commissioner Casino?
Aye. That motion passes 7-1. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So
the next slide.
Okay.
Yeah. So if there are no further questions or points,
none of those points,
then we do have a motion to make a recommendation to the commissioners, if anyone would like to do that.
We'd entertain that motion if someone wanted to make it.
I move to recommend approval of the development of project item 824 emergency housing ordinance, permitting criteria flexibility, which amends the homeless encampment administrative procedures chapter within Title 20, 21, 22, and 23 to allow for a waiver of some way. The waiver of some permitting criteria for homeless encampments during declared emergency will clarify application of permitting procedures for homeless encampments.
Second.
The motion's been made, and to repeat the motion, has been moved to recommend the approval of Development Code Docket Item A24 Emergency Housing Ordinance, permitting criteria flexibility, which amends the Homeless Encampment and Administrative Procedures chapters within Title 20, 21, 22, and 23 to allow for the waiver of some permitting criteria on homeless encampments during a declared emergency and clarified applications and permitting procedures for homeless encampments. Call for the vote.
All right.
Just a thing. I just want to make sure. Now, this goes to the board, and it'll go through the public hearing and all that. so the public will have an opportunity to. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Call for the vote.
All right. Commissioner Passinger.
Nay.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Simmons.
Aye.
Commissioner Wheatley.
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Commissioner Carmen.
Aye.
Commissioner Halverson.
Aye.
Commissioner Pacino.
Aye. That motion passes 7-1. Thank you very much, Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Commissioners, and thank you for your community service.
All right. Well, with that, we will be moving on to some new business. Item number 5 on our agenda, the work session on the Grand Mountain Sub-Area Plan with Caitlin Nelson.
Oh no. Okay. Hang on, guys. Technical difficulty. All right. Which one do you want? The PowerPoint?
Yes.
We'll make it into some points.
Commissioner Pessinger, we might lose you on the screen, so if you have something, would you please just jump in?
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Well, before we get started, I did want to introduce one of our newest associate planners, Amelia Schwartz. She comes to us from Chehalis. She's got some great background in planning and in current planning, so not just long-range planning, but she's actually issued permits. So Amelia will be helping Kate with a lot of the development code pieces of the Grand Mound, and then you'll see her on a couple of our additional projects in the future. Do you want to draw here?
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Good evening, planning commissioners. I am Caitlin Nelson. Okay. Hey, please hold questions. Keep going, but I gotta fix this. Keep going. Okay. Please hold your questions till the end, including after Amelia has done her part of the presentation. Also, just as a note, there have been some small changes and rearranging of the PowerPoint, so it'll just have a few differences if you have a printed out copy. The Grand Mountain Sub-Area Plan is 2022 to 2023 comprehensive plan amendment docket as item CP84, and it is the board's number one priority out of 9 docketed amendments. There were 3 open houses held in 2018, one in the spring of 2020. Here on,
it's not being shared though.
I am. Okay. Yes. If turn that TV so that they can see it, because we can see this one over here.
It does.
Okay.
Oh,
you're gonna get in big trouble.
It's gonna fall on the wall.
Oof. Okay, I want to keep going. In the meantime.
Yeah.
I have.
I can see.
Okay, included in this update are the repeal and replace of the 1996 Grand Mountain Sub-Area Plan, as well as the consideration of 8 site-specific land use and rezoning proposals, and updates to the Thurston County Code, including moving design standards for Grand Mountain into the code. They currently exist in the Sub-Area Plan, so they're not very easy for staff to find, and some proposed reductions to the minimum lot widths within these residential zoning districts. The sub-area plan specifically guides growth within the urban growth area, and as is in the name, they are areas designated for more urban types of development. Grand Mountain allows for more industrial and commercial types of uses in the surrounding areas like Rochester, And there are some differences in this map created by TRPC in how we categorize land uses, but you can get a general idea of the land use types from it. The plan looks at growth over a 20-year planning period and acts as a mini comprehensive plan, which allows for amendments once a year. We made updates to the plan specific to the Grand Mount area because we would want to repeat information that is located within our county comprehensive plan. And generally around things that include land use, population forecasts, goals and policies, and that sort of thing. Some of those updates are from the Thurston Regional Planning Council Buildable Lands Report. They are forecasting that the population in Grand Mount will double by 2045 from 2020. And they're also forecasting an excess capacity of 22% of housing units based on current zoning. And this is a good thing. A healthy percentage is between 18 and 25%. There are 8 land use and rezoning proposals, as I mentioned before. 3 of those requests are also requesting an expansion to the UGA. These requests must be consistent with countywide planning policies, comp plan policies, and state law. Properties that are also requesting an expansion to the UGA have specific additional policies that they must meet and provide reasoning for. These proposals must also go to a UGA review board, and that board can provide a different recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners from what the Planning Commission provides. The total acreage requested is 241 acres, and you received this map as attachment C in your materials. Your approval or denial of these land use requests and UGA expansions do not have to be all or nothing. They would be reviewed for their individual consistency with the applicable policies that they need to be reviewed for. I went through that pretty quickly, but we will go back to questions after Amelia has finished her part of the presentation on the code amendments.
Hello, I will not speak near as efficiently and quickly as Caitlin. So I apologize, I'm a little slow. But we, like you said, we won't hold questions until the end in the interest of time. And I'll try to speak fast enough so I'm also keeping track of my time. All right. So the code amendments that we're going to be looking at are for lot widths and then the development slash design guidelines. So we'll start with lot widths. Okay. So the existing minimum lot widths in the Grand Mount area are larger than other similar areas within county, and that has apparently made it difficult to do subdivisions, buy land, and develop it because they're having to maintain a minimum lot width that is larger than, let's say, the average.
By minimum, you're talking about 1 acre versus 5 acres versus
no 20 feet versus 120. So, like, not quite that range. I think there's 2 different lot types there, but yeah, in feet.
Okay.
And it's only for 2 different zone types, and we'll show those in a moment. So the general concerns are the lot width size and then all the different lot types we have in that lot width. This part is in the code. So concerns, are they too large? What widths would actually be helpful? But what size can we keep to maintain that rural character and not turn it into, you know, a subdivision in urban Olympia? And then we want to look the lot types and see how they're broken down. If we like that, we want to change them. All right. So the only zones impacted with this, with this code amendment are only 2 different residential types. It's the R3-6 and the R4-16. So this won't change their usage. It won't change what's going to come in there. It's just changing how we are regulating that minimum lot size. Okay, so this is what we have currently, and your best bet is looking at that screen. Feels a little like an eye appointment. My apologies if this is a lot of information. So in the yellow to blue scale, we have what Grand Mound has existing right now. The left number is for R3-6/1, and the right number is R4-16/1. So right now, the minimum lot width for, say, an interior lot is 75 feet for R3-6, 60 feet for R4-16. Compare that to the Olympia standard lot is 50, 45, 40. Lacey and Tumwater also have 50, 40 is kind of the minimums compared to that 75 to 60. Then you'll also see the difference in lot types. Whereas Grand Mound lot types, there are 9, interior, corner, waterfront, cul-de-sac, it goes on. Olympia does standard lot, townhouse, cottage, that's it. Lacey does lot with alley access, lot without alley access, and multifamily infill. Tumwater, lot without alley access, lot with alley access. So they're not splitting it into those different categories. We do have other categories, zone types, that do split it, but they don't consist of waterfront lot. So that's one thing to consider. All right. So the proposal you'll have in your documents is keeping most of those lot types. But then we remove waterfront to just to make that easier. And then we would get those lot minimum width sizes a bit closer to the other UGAs in the county. So we're not trying to get it closer to, like I said earlier, urban areas. We're looking at other UGAs in the county. How can we get that closer to that, make it a little more standard? So those are, that's an option. And you'll see that written out in detail, and you can actually compare the different charts. All right, we'll go on to design guidelines. So currently, these are called the development guidelines. And just to clear up, part of the proposal is also change the name to design guidelines because they don't actually have guidelines for development necessarily or for design. So this would clarify some things. All right, so the current guidelines are contained with this 18-page document for the Grand Mound Sub-Area Plan. Like Caitlin mentioned earlier, it's not in the code. So developers and staff are having to go to external sources to look at what these projects will actually require. So it discusses signs, parking lots, and landscaping standards. And then there's a little image of kind of what one of the pages that it looks like. So the proposal is updated and move it into the code. And so we keep that streamlined. Where do we look for our regulations in the code? So some of the general updates that are in there, the proposed updates, obviously, we are going to be referring back to existing code. So leading it back to what we've already regulated. It's increasing tree species options. So we're not limiting to tree species that maybe aren't the most successful for the area they're in. We're possibly incentivizing retention of significant or existing trees. Increasing options for design and sense of place. So sense of place is something you can't put. It's a little hard to capture. But based on some of the community input from the earlier Chehalis development plan, as well as community meetings prior to COVID, a lot of people mentioned wanting to keep it their rural feel, their hometown feel. So it's kind of an attempt to actually get a cohesive sense of place with the design. So we'll see. And then removing some language that's not applicable, it's redundant, nobody's enforcing it, taking that out. And then bringing in some policies and recommendations from that Chehalis Tribes Grand Mound Development Plan that was done over a decade ago. And then adding in language to improve the pedestrian experience, safety, and access. All right, that's the quick rundown of what you'll be seeing. And then so the next steps is we've got our next work session on the 21st, and then we'll have an option to schedule a public hearing. Contact info is on the slide.
So I'm gonna stop sharing so that we can see everybody.
Thank you.
Well, I know that you had a lot going on so far.
Yeah.
I appreciate you setting up that.
Well,
so starting would be great.
Well, can I imagine we're going to be talking about this a lot, so I don't want to, I maybe want to pick the low-hanging fruit just really quickly. And that would be, I had one question on the, I guess it's not the design guidelines, it's the code, the lot size and all that. And it's just one really simple question. I was looking, and I'll talk about this at some point, but I was looking at census data for the three census tracts that are kind of the most important, the 2020 census data. And I noticed that in the Rochester tract that this UGA is in, there are like 840 mobile home units. And I am really interested in how this UGA can help with, medium density housing and low and very low income housing. And so I'm wondering, can you consider mobile homes within the UGA? I mean, do any of these categories that you put up there, these lot sizes, can they accommodate that if that were to prove to be something to consider? Because there are 840 of them in the tract already.
So one thing that I do want to clarify first is that the census data boundary does not overlap with the Grand Mound UGA very well. So it very well could be considering properties that aren't actually in the UGA.
Yeah, but I absolutely think that we have to think big. You know, the UGA is not its own thing. It's part, the purpose of it is to support the South County. You know, it's part of a larger picture. And to my mind, we're not really, as a planning commission at least, we're not thinking about it properly if we're only thinking of it in terms of the UGA, but it's what the UGA is there to do. And I see it as being there to support the surrounding areas, which is kind of the point that one of the public commenters, Loretta, brought up, is that, you know, there's a large agricultural community there. There are agricultural workers who need housing. You know, there's all kinds of things that we can be thinking about that this UGA could be part of the solution for. And so, I mean, I thought it was a fairly simple question. It's just, yeah. can you put, if you wanted to, could you put mobile homes in there or something like that?
So I'm not sure of the usage for those zones, but with minimum lotlets, if we reduce those lotlets, it does make it cheaper to develop. So developers, whether they're private, whether they're large, they can put more homes in, and they, you know, it's going to cost less upfront. And so they're not going to have to build the mansion to get a return on their investment. Mm-hmm. So it, by lowering those minimum lot widths, we have more opportunity to bring in middle-class housing.
Chris, I don't know if this is a question you can answer, because I know that you're not on the permitting side, the development side, you're on the planning side, but it's my understanding that this is a sub-area, not a UGA, and as such, it's still unincorporated county, and as such, the regulations for development cannot have a distinction between a mobile home and a stick-built home. That if a stick-built home could be built, a mobile home could be rolled in. Now, maybe I'm understanding that wrong.
You're not. That is correct. So what we do is ensure that policies that are within sub-area plan allow for mobile homes to be placed on within those certain zones, and they can only go in obviously residential zoning, and just make sure that the zoning that is laid out allows for that, so it wouldn't necessarily be within the lot widths. By minimizing our lot widths, we get more lots in a particular area, but the zoning itself, the 4-6, the 4-16, that's what, if it was an area where it could be prohibited, that's where it would be. And we can go back, but you're correct. If we can build a stick built home, we have to allow for a mobile home to be placed there. So thank you.
I have a question about specifically about lot widths. If if we match the lot widths of the subarea, Grand Mound subarea, to those of the UGAs, that would obviously increase the buildable land utilization rate. And it might go from 22% to something higher. I don't know what it is. Is there, you said that sweet spot is 18 to 25. If we all of a sudden bumped up over 25% of excess usable lands, is there a ramification to that, a negative ramification to that?
Not necessarily. What we would need to do is go back and look to make sure we have capacity in our infrastructure to allow for that. That's part of this entire sub-area plan look, is to make sure that we have the appropriate infrastructure in those areas so that we can get the water, we can get the sewer, the roads, those sorts of things there.
Oh, that was my question.
And who provides the allowed density wouldn't increase. Correct.
Yeah. Who provides septic and water to the Grand Mound area right now? The county.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And in the future, it's expected, unless they incorporate, that the county will.
Yes.
So this falls under Public Works, Tim Wilson, Storm and Sewer Water.
Correct.
Septic. Okay.
Yep.
Which they already are having a problem. With the septic and water systems in Grand Mound as far as cost. The people that pay for that right now in the Grand Mound area are only paying a small portion of the actual cost that the county is incurring for that septic and water system. That's a fact. So I'm interested to know how that, if that's not going to change, then by creating this area and putting in all these homes and stuff, how is that going to work? Are they going to require HOAs for developments like the cities do?
I'm sorry, but if I'm building
out there, I believe I'm incurring the cost of putting in the well or putting in a septic system.
No.
Well, I'm going to have to pay for it to get it put in, installed. Mm-hmm. So it's okay. I get what you're saying, Barry, but I'm trying to figure out where the county expense for water and sewage is. Mm-hmm. If it's a septic and it's my well.
It's not a well.
They have a sewer system.
So they right. do. Okay.
That's
yeah. okay.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That sewer and water system for the Grand Mound area used to be run by the citizens of that area. It used to be an unincorporated water and sewer
district,
an SUD. But they failed. The expenses got too high, and the county had to step in and take over control of the system.
And you're saying it's undersized.
Oh, it's grossly undersized and it's underfunded. And the county has basically taken the expense out of general funds to pay for the cost of the system.
Go ahead, Commissioner Weasley.
I thought I read either here or in the buildable lands report or somewhere that there's a lot of sewer capacity that it's like huge.
So what we can do is, as Public Works come in and discuss the capacity for water and sewer in the Grand Mound area, but the policies that you're reviewing in the sub-area plan do impact infrastructure.
Well,
and I don't know, if it's true that they're underfunded and the county commissioner is sending the money, I don't know that that's our place to make changes. Because our job is to do land use planning.
Right.
If the commissioners want to continue to fund that, if they're doing that, then that's their choice. If they want to change the rate structure and make it pay for itself, that's their choice.
They're doing that too. I think these are really two separate issues, and that the land use plan is separate than whether or not the infrastructure is there.
That's
the infrastructure right. is going to, if it will catch up or it won't catch up. That's not really the land use planning part.
So the discussion about how it's getting paid, that's current. That's not part of our, that's outside of our purview. Making sure that what we're doing as far as the land use plan doesn't impose that we have the capacity within what we've already planned out for the next 20 years is part of our land use review. So we have to do that.
Commissioner Hansen?
This conversation, it took me back to the notes I was making during public comment, but it occurs to me that it begs the question, what's the greater vision long-term for this area before we get into the weeds of doing the lot widths and things like that? You mentioned there was some public workshops, but they were years ago before my time here and before the entire world changed. So is there any interest in doing some public outreach and figuring out what is the greater vision before we get down to the details of how we accomplish it?
Yeah, Commissioner Wheeling?
Yeah, well, just sort of going back to the infrastructure thing, because that's part of it. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's heaps of infrastructure. I mean, what I took away from what I've read from the Buildable Lands Report and from, you know, all the materials we've been given, and I read the transportation stuff from TRPC, you know, is that the whole point is that this is, you know, the whole point of having one of these is it's a place where you have that, you deliver that infrastructure efficiently, right? And you encourage people to build within those boundaries so that you're being as efficient as possible in delivering that infrastructure. And it looks like Grand Mound is really in good shape. I mean, it's got heaps of land for all the uses, you know, it's like way in excess of, you know, the anticipated capacity for industrial needs. It's got tons of land for, you know, all of the things. It's got the infrastructure there. It's got the sewer and, you know, all of that stuff. And the really key piece of infrastructure, transportation, you know, the TRPC right now is like scribbling away on writing, you know, writing up the stuff for putting, you know, they're going to put in those traffic circles. You know, the federal government's kicking down money to do that kind of thing. And so it seems like the traffic infrastructure is going to be pretty reasonable too, and that the planning needs to be around that. And I think that the, you know, one thing that wasn't, you know, maybe it would be helpful for everyone to know that there was that, what was it, 1990, the Chehalis tribes put together you referred to that, but there is a kind of a visionary plan available. And it seems like the county and TRPC have been working off of that plan already. And it's here, you know, and I think we can add, you know, I would like to add to that by really emphasizing, you know, I agree with Loretta that we should bring in the fact that this is in relation to Rochester and to the ag land there, you know, that's an important part of this story as well. And it kind of gets left out somehow, you know, that could be better developed. But I think the overall vision is actually there. I'd like us to maybe talk about it, make sure we all understand it, and it would help to maybe read that Chehalis Tribes document. But I think, you know, I think this could be fairly easy, you know, once we're kind of all familiar with it.
I think that one of the things that we have to consider here is that this area is going to probably be the largest development down in that area, and it's going to have a lot of growth. And this is our opportunity to match it more closely to UGA development codes and densities. And I think those kind of development codes and densities will just make it better and more efficient, and it will make a transition to incorporation at some time down the road easier and better. And so the closer we can get our sub-area plan to match UGA plan or UGAs that we have now, I think the better off that we're going to be and the better off the area will be. But it's certainly open for discussion.
Okay, so just to jump in really quick. Long story short is, yes, we do have capacity for sewer and water within the UGA. That doesn't include the nitty-gritty details.
It is in your memo that the water system plan and the sewer plan are in the process of being updated with Public Works currently. And those will especially address any of the issues over the next 20-year planning period. That also includes the properties that we are considering in these proposals for expanding the UGA. That is something that we would need to consider, is whether or not we would have capacity with those properties. And we do, so that's not something that we need to really focus on. There are other countywide planning policies that we'll look at, and Public Works can definitely talk more about the details of that, but long story short is we do have capacity.
Are you planning on bringing Public Works in to talk to us about infrastructure then?
If you need to have that.
Do we need to have Public Works coming to talk about infrastructure? I don't think we do. I'll take your guys' word for it that it's there.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
I'll go back and look at the documents I read.
Okay, thank you.
There are some issues
getting
infrastructure to individual homes, but that's a different issue because that is on the property owners.
That's why I asked the question. Is the county looking at requiring developers to form HOAs, which takes care of some of your stormwater requirements and lighting and stuff like that? That'd I know there's going to be impact fees.
Well, so as far as the water system and the sewer system plans, I think that those would be addressed during those updates, and those are going to be in the next couple of years, so we're not going to be able to talk about it at the moment. The other infrastructure issues, Public Works is also working on updates to the road standards, so that would also be included in that. So unfortunately, I can't give you a lot more information on it at the moment because they're all in progress.
I don't know how deep we were going to get into this tonight. Were we going to go through each one of these eight amendment or proposals, or how far in did you want to go?
I think ideally I would want to be able to answer the main questions that you have right now, and then if you would be able to bring back questions at the
on
next
the individual
meeting.
Project, okay.
Yeah,
let's go to Commissioner Wheatley then.
Yeah, I guess
I guess I really need some clarification here. Is this a UGA or is it not a UGA?
Yes, our subarea plan and our UGA are the same boundaries. So we're, yes, it is a subarea. It acts as a subarea, but the UGA is what we're going to focus on because it has more regulations, more policies we have to follow.
Okay. Because in my opinion, I'll just lay it out there right now. My understanding is if you have ample capacity within your UGA, there's no reason to expand the boundaries of your UGA. So is what you're saying that you would like us to consider whether we would like to approve these proposed, you know, consider whether we would approve these proposed amendments when they're requesting expansions of the UGA? Because for me, that's a hard no, because there's plenty of capacity within the UGA now. There's more than enough capacity. And the whole point of a UGA is you want to infill it. So, you know, I would really like clarity on the intention there, because I cannot support expanding the UGA boundaries. It looks, you know, I was trying to understand why the boundaries were drawn the way they were. And it looks to me like there's sort of, if you do kind of layering, there's sort of environmental reasons, for example, why it's shaped the way it is. There's traffic reasons why it's shaped the way it is. There's reasons why you want to have your middle density housing where it is. And two of the requests would, you know, completely transform the area that is supposed to be the dense housing area. And so I have a little heartburn over that. So I think we do need to consider, you know, there's a reason why they all get sort of put on your desk at the same time, so you can think of the overall impact of all these requested changes. And I see them really changing the UGA rather significantly. And I also see like this unneeded notion of, you know, expanding UGA boundaries when as was mentioned, you know, part of the problem is even filling in the UGA as we have it now. So I would really like some clarity about this difference between the plan and the UGA, if they're one and the same or not.
Yeah, so I have on the screen right now some of the requirements that have to be met to expand a UGA. It needs to be served by water, sewer, and transportation, and we've talked about that. Urbanization is compatible with resources, resource uses in critical areas, and that is generally, you know, making sure that we're not including things like wetlands. Must be contiguous to existing UGA. All the properties are touching, so it meets that. Is required to provide land for growth for the next 20 years. I think the way that we have looked at it, no, we do not need to expand to accommodate growth. But the other part of it is there an overriding public benefit beyond the area proposed for inclusion related to protection, public health, safety, and welfare? So we would have to provide reasoning for how it would be doing that. There are other things that can be considered. Two of the properties that are in that R4 zone, one of them is a firehouse, that a fire station that is not really being used for residential. There is another property that has some very minor commercial uses. So there is no residential property there. So one thing that you could consider is, does it make sense, it's along Highway 99, to make that a commercial spot? Would you want to move R4 to another location? Does it make sense? There's a lot of R3 that isn't developed. So an option could be to make that corridor commercial across from the Great Wolf Lodge, and then maybe that wasn't the best place for R4. Another property is requesting expansion of the UGA to be R4, so that could potentially serve as a public benefit if we're removing it somewhere else. So there are a couple different things to consider. You're right, it is complicated, and you do have to have good reasoning for why you're doing it.
I do want, just to answer your question directly, Commissioner Bailey, the UGA, the Grandma UGA, and the Sub-Aaron plan are one and the same. And to think about it, I would think about it this way, is that we're joint planning with ourselves. So it's a mini comprehensive plan that if Grand Mountain had a city within it, we'd be doing a joint plan with them. So there's no city within it, so we're joint planning with ourselves. So this is a mini comp plan for the Grand Mountain UGA.
Does anybody else have anything on this particular topic for right now?
A couple of questions. Who determines what the lot sizes would be? I heard some of the things when we looked at Olympia, we looked at Tumwater, we looked at this other, but how did we come up with the figures that you did for lot size specifically?
Go to, that one. Okay, so what I did, and of course this is a proposal too, so you guys decide what I should be putting on paper eventually. So what I did was I looked at what are kind of the general sizes that are popping back up.
Right.
And a lot of that is the 50, the 40. And then I had a lot more screens when I looked at this. So it's easier for me to directly compare. So then, this one's good. So this is the current, and then this is just the draft proposal you have now on the red side. So you see some like the flag lot, I don't decrease it because it's already at 20. And 20 was typically, I think, the only places that went much lower than 20, or maybe the Olympia UGA. I don't have stuff on here.
Okay, what is a flag lot?
A flag lot is where a general lot, you go, you see it from the street, and it's all there, the whole width is there. A flag lot, you have a thin pathway, and then you get to the lot back behind, and maybe there's a lot right here.
Got it.
So it looks like the state of Oklahoma.
Or a drive behind another house.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's often like if somebody has a really long lot, they'll split it into a flag lot and then hang on. So with flag lots, we don't want to go crazy with that because you have to have road access.
Right.
And Amelia, correct me if I'm wrong, but in general, we took a look at the same types of zoning areas in our other UGAs. And what, thank you. And what are we, what were we seeing there? And then pulling that into the like types, lot types in the Grand Mount area, but also keeping in mind the public comments that we have received, that there's a sense of place, that they want a town feeling, that we want to keep it a rural community feeling it set, as we taking a look at those different lot sizes.
Because I just noted that we have Olympia, Lacey, and Tumwater, which are the three of the largest cities in Thurston County.
These are from their UGAs,
right.
And they are specifically residential zones with the same density levels.
Right.
So it's, I'm not looking at a high density area in a UGA or anything like that. I'm looking at lower density in an urban growth area. So already removed and then removed again.
Have you looked at the areas like Rainier and Tenino, what theirs are? Is there more of a rural city, or, you know?
And I'm trying to think of a month ago when I made this chart.
So we can go back and take a look to see how they compare against that
and look at what zones they have.
Because you got Grand Mound, which is a very small community, like Rainier, like Tenino, but yet you're comparing it against the largest cities in Thurston County. That's my point.
But it is important to note that I'm not looking at the general city limit zones. I'm looking at the UGA zone specifically.
Let's go back and take a look. Commissioner
Wheatley, you have more?
Commissioner
Harmon, you have something? Caitlin, you said that there's adequate supply of houses for the 20-year period.
Mm-hmm.
Does that take into account if some of this property is turned to commercial and everybody's talking about bringing in agricultural storage and all kinds of commercial stuff?
And industrial.
Does that include the anticipated increase in population due to added work, added employment?
The projections are based on a build out. So they're looking at both the employment growth for what's allowed there in the commercial and the industrial zones, and what kind of population increase will come from those jobs. If we're talking about, I'm not sure if I'm understanding the agricultural concerns correctly, but how I'm interpreting it is that the desire would be to have uses associated with agriculture, which would fit probably within the commercial and industrial zones, so we wouldn't have to change any zoning there. We would want to maybe do some small calculations. In the memo, it does mention how many housing units would be removed from those projections. And so I would think that from there, it would just be a quick calculation to figure out how that affects that percentage that I mentioned, that 18 to 25 for a good surplus of housing. So we haven't done that yet, but that is something that we could do.
Because I'd be interested in knowing what the projections are for employment. It would increase the need for.
Commissioner Nelson, did you have something?
Well, I was just going to say to Doug's question, the problem we're going to run into is if we make a change, like the fire station, if we take that from 4 to 16 to commercial, then not until after we're done is TRPC going to go in and redo their numbers and figure out how that changes. And as far as, you know, we have the 22% number up there. And I mean, that's kind of obviously that's a guess. I think the reason 18 to 22 is the right spot is because the Growth Management Hearings Board said 25 is acceptable. So that was basically what you have is you have this all this property here and you've got a plan, but you don't know what's going to happen to it. You know, take Grand Mountain, there's the gravel pits that are still active. If they're still active in 20 years, they obviously aren't going to develop to whatever their capacity is. So that's where that 22% comes in. Is we know that we've got this capacity here that's not going to get used. you know, it's the same when you do the county, you look at a farm like mine, probably, you know, it, if it's zoned 1-5, probably there's a bunch of development there that's not going to get used. So you have to have your market adjustment or your market. I think they call it the market factor.
Commissioner Wheatley, do you have more?
Well, yeah. Well, one, I'm wondering just really briefly as a question for you, Mr. Chair, could we, you know, on this ag thing, could we maybe have Stephen Bramwell from WSU Extension come in and just do like 15 minutes of sort of talking to us about how agriculture might use the zones that are within the UGA, like, you know, not the housing part, but the commercial part, like if anybody would know sort of how this UGA would relate to the agriculture over there.
I don't think that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, maybe that would be very helpful.
But I mean, obviously, we don't have subpoena power or anything, but we
could. Yeah, but we could certainly invite him. I'm sure he would be.
So we would have to work with Stephen because he doesn't understand the land use world.
Yeah.
And so what we do is we could work with Stephen and talk about, you know, what are the things that he's looking for, the community is looking for from agricultural operations, kind of uses are they looking to cite, and then take a look at our current zoning or what we propose for you all and where all that would fit in to that zoning. If it is all, you know, it all is accommodated or so we can do that.
Commissioner, I think it'd be helpful.
I think that's what Chris is talking about is probably the best way to go about it, because one thing you have to think about is we can do all the zoning in the world, but somebody still has to come in and put in that infrastructure, you know, and there's a reason that there's tractor and seed and fertilizer dealers in Chehalis and not in Thurston County. And I don't know that there's, I mean, there are interested, and I know Tenino's working on doing some stuff, but, you know, if somebody wanted to come into Thurston County and do this stuff, there's really, I mean, I don't think this thing is stopping them.
Could you make the invite?
Well, we can make the invite, and then, like I said, prior to that, we will sit down with Stephen and lay out what are those uses and how do they line up with the current zoning to those uses, because what you're actually asking him is for a land use analysis that he can't do.
Okay, yeah, I don't know what I'm just asking for a chat with Stephen Bramwell, but if that's what it is.
You got something? Okay, how about, you know?
No, but actually, I just have one thing. Why did you go from 9 different lot types just down to 8? Was there
Why did I remove waterfront?
Well, why are we still leaving it at 8? Why wouldn't we consolidate further?
Well, it's just a proposal. It's to get you started looking at it, looking at potential.
If the other UGAs have 2 and 3 lot types, I wonder if 8 might be overkill.
That's why I looked at some of those and brought up the lot types. And so that's something what you guys think is best. There are still other zone types, residential types in Thurston County that do split it to 8.
Okay.
I didn't see all of them had waterfront, which was awesome. And Grand Mount's not exactly known for its waterfront properties. So I thought it might be one to suggest taking out, but there are still other zones that do split it in. It still makes sense to have all of the, all we're showing you is the 3 out of the 3 larger UGAs that make, that correlate the most. And I did want to pop back in on the Bakota and Rainier. They don't have anywhere near the same density since they're so far off I-5. And for several of their residential zones, they're on minimum lots.
There aren't minimum.
Yeah, or they're not split out in any similar fashion. But so that was a big part of it is if I looked at them, I'd be looking at one home per 5 acres rather than 4 to 16 per one. And it would be drastically opposed to what that zone type is meant for.
Okay, I mean,
I
drive through right here in Fennel all the time, and there's a lot of construction, residential construction going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to have had some type of lot width or some type of zoning discussion. That's why I brought it up.
And I will go ahead and for the next meeting, I'll try to make up a list of all those two.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Yeah, I would like to put it in the record, you know, so that it gets into the minutes that I had sent out a list of questions that's available. I don't know if it would be.
I think that goes in part of public record in the meeting packet that's listed. It should be on
okay.
the website.
Yeah. All right. And in relation to that, I do have, you know, I'm really interested in how this UGA can help with two very current issues, one of them being the housing crisis. And, you know, from my perusal of the census data of the UGA tract and the sort of neighboring tracts that are similar to it, sort of going out to Bucota and, you know, going west to Rochester and, you know, I think there's one little tract somewhere else too. But anyway, you know, the kind of the big picture that I took from just quickly perusing the 2020 data was that there is an affordable housing crisis in the south part of the county. You know, we think of people being homeowners, but over 25% of folks are renters. And a certain percentage of them are those people who really, really, really struggle to pay the rent. And, you know, it takes a big part of their paycheck. A big chunk of people, I actually have the numbers, but, you know, a lot of people are making less than $50,000 a year. A lot of people are making less than $25,000 a year. And, you know, I would really, really love to see this UGA be partly about addressing the housing issues for these people. I'm very interested in that. And so as part of that, I would love it if we could have some kind of an analysis that's census-based that is incorporates the surrounding, you know, kind of feeder community, because really, you know, like when there were the workshops and everything, I mean, a lot of the people that were giving the input were people from the area, not from the UGA, right? And, you know, what they were saying is they like, you know, they're excited about the amenities, you know, having a, they would love to have another place to shop. They'd like to have enough density, you know, that there's a grocery store, there's a restaurant and so on that, you know, kind of adds to the amenities of the area. So there's that. But also, you know, there's this need again for more housing for people who are struggling to pay for it. And the other thing that I noticed from the census data was, and this goes to another crisis that we have, the climate crisis, that a lot of people spend a lot of time commuting out of this general region. And so, you know, a very large percentage in one census tract is over 50% have at least a 30-minute commute to work. And, you know, surprising numbers, or maybe not so surprising, you know, even an hour commute just one way. So, you know, the other, you know, ideal for planners, of course, is that by building up the UGA, you might provide opportunities for people to be able to work closer to home and not have to commute. So you kind of help with the whole climate crisis, greenhouse gas thing too. So, you know, I'm not sure how we do analysis about that, but that's why I kind of asked the questions in that list of questions that I provided, especially around HB 1220, because the legislature has made it really clear that it's really interested in trying to address the housing crisis. and that they've, you know, they put stuff in that isn't required for us, right? Because it's previous to the passage of HB 1220. But I would love to see some of that incorporated anyway, because really, you know, that's what the legislature wants, and it's really what we want, I think.
Right. So we'll take a look at housing that using the requirements under 1220, larger look forward to our comprehensive plan update for the entire county. It makes more sense to do that on a county basis instead of on a sub area or UGA by UGA basis. So we'll take a look at that in our comp plan updates in 2025. So we'll start working on that. The other piece of that is that the guidance document that goes along with that wonderful bag law that they put together is just being now created by Commerce. So
yeah,
to try and put it together at the moment with this particular UGA,
okay,
be extremely difficult. So we'll take a broader look at the county under 1220 during our comprehensive plan update.
But we are trying to make decisions. I mean, this goes very directly to decisions that we need to make. Like, we need to think about, you know, do we want to support that high density neighborhood, or do we want to allow, you know, high, you know, there's a proposal to have a higher density neighborhood outside the UGA and for us to expand it to allow that to happen. And those are questions we need to answer now. And so I think it would at least be helpful to have some kind of analysis of needs that are relevant to the kind of zoning that we're looking at and how consistent we want it to be.
Needs of what, though?
Well, for instance, I mean, if we're looking at, you know, this firehouse and the other property that's within the middle density zone, according to this map, and there's reasoning for having it there that's related to transportation, you know, multimodal access, congestion, you know, there's all these overlays, right, that we're supposed to be considering when we're thinking about, well, why do we want to put it there and not, you know, over here on the, you know, on the west of the UGA? Why would we want to expand over there when we want to put it here? Why would we want to turn this into AC when it's where we want to put the dense housing? I mean, we have those kinds of questions before us. We have these eight things we need to look at that are very much related to what's the overall vision for this thing. And it would be helpful for us to be, or at least for me, to be thinking about this when I understand what the needs of the larger community are, especially around housing. And sort of how this fits into that, because it seems to me like this UGA is the place where that multi-family housing and that low-income housing is going to go. You know, what's really great about HB 1220 is that it is asking to have those facts before people who need to make decisions.
So the House bill requires us to look at housing based on median income, not necessarily on what's needed or wanted in the area. And so that's the difference. So we can take a look at what happens if we remove this particular 4-6 and change it to AC, but we're not, at the moment, we're not doing an analysis based on income.
Right. But we, as a planning commission, have a slightly different mission, because it's our job to be sort of looking at this holistically. We have the permission to do that, I guess is what I'm saying.
So again,
we can do more. We can have the vaguer, broader conversations,
right,
that you can't have.
And that's why I'm asking the clarifying questions. I'm asking you, what is it that you want us to analyze?
I'd like to know, I would like some analysis of housing needs that's sort of based on 1220. You know, it's, you're supposed to sort of, my understanding of 1220 is that there's supposed to be kind of some information developed about housing needs based on income levels. You know, that there's supposed to be sort of a report provided as part of the planning process. And it doesn't have to be anything super fancy,
yeah,
but just like the the tracts that are, you know, sort of from west to east that are kind of most relevant to the UGA, you know, just taking those and just doing some analysis of the housing needs.
Okay, so we'll take a look to see what we can do. But again, when you say housing needs, we're trying to figure out what the need that I'm analyzing for. So we'll take a look at some of this.
Commissioner Hanson. I just have a question about the details of this. When looking at income, median income, and housing needs, are we doing this on like a census tract basis? Because you mentioned looking at this.
Guidance that's okay. Being developed by Commerce. That's why we are better off doing it at a county level when we do the comprehensive plan
once
update.
We get the median income for the county, we don't get a real good idea of what's happening in Grand Mound.
Exactly.
But like I mentioned before, the census data that we have doesn't line up with the Grand Mound UGA. So we don't really have the information.
Okay, well, let me try to clarify. I don't only want to study the UGA because the UGA is a solution to how to best serve the South County. And one of those needs is that there's a lot of low income folks, and that, you know, and if there's commercial development, there's going to be even more need. But we cannot, you know, as a planning commission, we're allowed to think more regionally about the purpose that the sub area serves.
So
the region,
right? When we have a Rochester sub area plan, which we completed in 2020, which is up there, and now we're taking a look at the more urbanized area, which is the Grand Mound UGA. So we'll take a look at some of this area and bring some information back. But
yeah, because my understanding, I mean, for instance, I mean, there's a direct relationship between this UGA and the Rochester sub-area plan, because I think it's stated explicitly in there that one of the purposes of this UGA is to help Rochester maintain its rural character by taking the population growth. And I think that's in some wording, that's actually in the Rochester plan.
And you can see that the brown area there is the most dense. It's the densest we have in any rural county.
Right. So, yeah, I'm not arguing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
One last request.
You bet.
Can we get a couple of these maps?
Sure.
One that shows where you can see the main roads and what the existing zoning is, so we can see where the commercial is, where the current zoning for residential and whatnot, and then one that's the same size and what would be the result if we approved all of these. So from an overlay, so that I can see, how does it really change the—
So you want two separate, I'm just going to clarify,
two separate documents.
Separate.
One is, here's what it is today.
Okay.
And you can see the roads, so you know where the main roads are, how they interface with what's there now. And then the proposed one, or the requested one, I'll call it, that shows the new stuff and, you know, what it would look like in the zone, and how it's zoned. All right.
Thank you very much. We are going to move. Thank you, Amelia and Caitlin. We are going to move on to other business. Item number six on our agenda, which is staff updates. Do you have anything today? You don't have anything since your staff update of introducing us to Amelia. Okay, we'll move on to item seven, which is our calendar. And for September 21st, we're going to work on this Grand Mount sub area again. We're going to work on the capital improvement program and the boundary line adjustment code. And we are still having, we have a public hearing on the 21st.
You have the public hearing on the CIP and the BLA, the boundary line adjustment.
Yep. So we have public hearings for both of those two. Other than Commissioner Day, is anybody else planning on missing September 21st? Okay, we should have eight of us. On October 5th, we should be working on docket item A25, forest conversions, and A18, the ag CAO. Is there anybody that's not planning on being here for October 5th? We should have a full house. Great. For item number eight, the good of the order, is there anything that anybody has for the good of the order?
Well, with having no further business, the meeting is adjourned.